Hello and welcome to the Risk Map Podcast, part of the global conversation on geopolitics and security, produced by Control Risks, the leading international risk consultancy. I'm Charles Hecker in London.
Also in London, I'm Claudine Fry. Welcome to the podcast.
Claudine, we've got a truly global podcast this week with visits to three continents. Among other places, we'll go to Europe and talk about the upcoming referendum in Italy. Voters there are going to the polls to decide on a series of critical reforms to how Italian democracy and governance function.
Chuck, in Asia, we're going to take a close look at the political unrest in South Korea, where thousands of protesters have taken to the streets demanding the ouster of the president. Recent developments there indicate that a resignation may be forthcoming.
But first, we'll pay a visit to the African country of Ghana, where presidential elections on 7 December may bring an end to the incumbent's tenure in office. Claudine spoke with our colleague Lucy James.
Lucy, the election is expected to be a two-horse race. Who are we expecting to win?
Well, as you said, Claudine, it's expected to be an extremely tight race between the government and the main opposition party. While it's been difficult to get any reliable information out of polls, Control Risks does expect the election to go to a second round runoff vote between the current president, John Mahama, and the opposition candidate, Nana Akufo-Addo. The second round runoff is likely to take place later on in December, and we expect Nana Akufo-Addo of the opposition to unseat the current president to win the election.
So it's going to be an interesting week or so. And what about the security situation associated with the election, Lucy? Are there any major security concerns associated with the poll? Are we expecting to see any violence of the kind that we've seen in other elections in the region this year?
So there's been a lot of talk about reports of violent instances around the elections, including clashes between oppositions of different political parties, particularly at party demonstrations and rallies. And this has really increased fears that there will be more widespread violence on the actual day of the polls by supporters and also by various other groups that are allied to either the government or the main opposition party. However, I would caution by saying that a lot of these fears will be more general worries and rumours surrounding the poll. There's nothing that we've seen to suggest that there will be widespread violence at the polls. However, we may see incidents of localised violence, further clashes between opposition supporters of both the government and the main opposition party, and some violence directed towards electoral commission officials manning the polls due to a number of contentious issues surrounding the electoral commission's conduct throughout the electoral process.
And what about after the election, Lucy? What do we expect to happen? What are we looking out for after the winner is sworn in sometime in January?
Well, the first thing to say is that the process is likely to be slightly delayed by a runoff vote. At the current time, the new president is due to be sworn in on the 7th of January, but that's likely to be pushed back to later on in the month if a second round runoff vote takes place later on in December. This will obviously mean that policy making in the first quarter of 2017 will be slightly delayed, and there will be a number of issues to sort out in the post-election period. But what we do expect to see from an incoming MPP government is broad policy continuity, continued economic reforms, but we are also expecting the MPP to announce policies that will bring greater scrutiny upon foreign contracts and licenses in Ghana and to address issues around local content concerns. We're expecting any incoming government to continue with IMF policy reforms to restore macroeconomic stability and address the energy crisis, which will be the major headline policies in Ghana for 2017 and beyond. Aside from general policy making and government transition, we also expect there to be a number of new legal cases coming out of the election, including challenges by smaller opposition parties against the Electoral Commission and even attempts to try and annul the results of the election once they're announced.
Do we expect any of those cases to have any impact, Lucy?
So these cases are not likely to massively distract from day-to-day governance, although they might delay some of the transition processes. It's unlikely to significantly destabilise the incoming government. There's just one other point I have to add, which is As we saw in 2012, even parties who contest the outcome of the elections are highly likely to respect judgments of high courts and constitutional courts in Ghana. So we don't expect there to be a degeneration around the broader political environment.
Thank you, Lucy. It's an election we'll be watching closely.
Thank you.
Claudine, skipping continents, let's move to the South Korean capital, Seoul. Anyone who's been following the media lately, and we will automatically assume that that's all listeners to the Risk Map podcast, will have recently seen a series of stunning photographs showing Seoul's central arteries clogged with political protest. Andrew Gillum, our most senior analyst in Asia, talked to me from Seoul. Andy, before we get started, just give me a feel for the atmosphere in South Korea. Seoul is a gigantic city. What's it like there right now?
Well, most of the city life is going on completely as normal, but around the actual protests and in the protests, the crowds at their peak are obviously absolutely massive. There's huge debate over the different numbers and estimates, but it's hundreds of thousands of people, which is huge even by local standards of some pretty big political protests. It's all very peaceful and very organized. A lot of families around wouldn't characterize it as, you know, nasty atmosphere at all. But there's definitely very real, deep public anger, not just in Seoul, but other cities where there's been protests. I think some aspects of the scandal here have really struck a nerve that taps into resentment of political business elite collusion, as it's perceived, that has been a big source of resentment for a very long time.
Andy, from an outsider's perspective, the situation in Seoul is extremely complicated and it's quite fluid. There are multiple scandals, each with intricate details. And in the space of a short podcast, can you get us to the very heart of the crisis in Seoul right now and the significance of what's happening in South Korea?
Essentially, we're looking here probably at the first impeachment of a South Korean president that is likely to stick. So we're potentially going to have President Park Geun-hye leave office about a year before when she's actually due to leave. And that's because of a whole series of scandals involving various forms of influence peddling and various other allegations, breach of laws on national state secrets laws and sharing information with a confidant of hers who is extremely controversial. That seems to be coming to a head now, but we've got a very messy range of scenarios for how this could play out. So this is certainly not done by a long way, but we are expecting now that Park Geun-hye is not going to be able to cling on to power and will probably end up leaving office sometime in spring next year.
And you mentioned that things are coming to a head and we have the impeachment in front of us. Can you tell us how this plays out from here and what at least the next few months look like?
Well, yesterday, Tuesday, Park Geun-hye made a speech which on the surface sounds almost like a resignation speech. It's probably not quite as simple as that. So between now and the 9th of December, where the current parliamentary session ends, if she doesn't resign formally in that period, it seems likely we'll see the impeachment attempt. And it's certainly not a certainty that that will succeed. The opposition would need some support from the ruling party, President Park's party, to succeed in impeachment. But there seems a pretty high chance of that happening now. There's then 60 days before the constitution requires a new president to be elected. So we'd see elections within that time. Now, there's all sorts of technicalities that could be thrown up that could delay all of this at any point. But it gives us, you know, roughly that time frame of 60 days or a few months in which we're probably going to see fresh elections. But because of the way this situation has played out, we could be seeing all sorts of party realignments and alliances and multiple different potential candidates for the presidency by the time the elections happen, assuming that they do. So it's definitely not a simple case of an obvious opposition candidate being in line to take over from Park. There's huge uncertainty over who will be the ultimate winners from this process.
Andy, two related questions as a follow-on to that. Is there anything that you can say at this point about any changes in policy under a new government, if and when that happens? And secondly, what is the business community to make of all of this, and what may or may not change for businesses in South Korea in the months and indeed in the year or so to come?
Well, from a business perspective, I think actually the implications are surprisingly few at the moment in terms of major changes that can be foreseen as a result of this. There's obviously some disruption insofar as we could have a significant period of time where government is effectively not operating properly in terms of legislation, at least. But we were already kind of at that point with Park's government, and it's not that unusual to have a bit of parliamentary paralysis towards the end of a presidential term here. And even assuming an opposition win in the next election, it's so unclear who the next candidates will be and the various platforms. I certainly don't think there's any particularly good news for business to come from this. Park Geun-hye had not really done a great deal that was very positive from a business perspective in terms of the various kinds of restructuring, labor reform, all sorts of things that business has been calling for a long time. If anything, there would probably be weaker chances of that under an opposition government. So no obvious good news outcomes, I think, from a business perspective. Probably the two main policy implications we could see from this more broadly, I think one is a real intensification of the existing momentum behind anti-corruption and anti-big business that was already present in Korea. There was a new law, a local anti-corruption law introduced quite recently, and that has involved a real tightening of scrutiny over all kind of relationships between public officials and private people, particularly businesses. So that, as along with long-standing kind of anti-corporation sentiment and now the anti-corruption sentiment that's come out as a result of the scandals surrounding the president, I think is really going to gel together to bring quite an intensive scrutiny on anti-corruption work and real scrutiny of big business. And the other area that stands out is North Korea policy. If the opposition regain power earlier than expected, then generally speaking, we'd expect them to be more inclined towards engagement with North Korea. And that's just one factor at the moment that plays in alongside the new administration coming in next year in the US, and whether potentially, as an outlier scenario, we might see a return to negotiations with North Korea. But obviously that has a lot of moving parts, including China as well, and North Korea itself above all. So really a very uncertain outlook on that front.
Andrew Gillum from Seoul, South Korea, thank you very much.
Chuck, thanks. On Sunday, 7 December, Italians will vote on a series of measures designed to make their country easier to govern and laws easier to enact. For a country that has had 64 governments since World War II, this is no mean feat. Chuck spoke about this with our most senior Europe analyst.
I'm joined here in London by David Lee, our senior analyst for Western Europe. Dave, on the heels of Brexit, and on the heels of the election of Donald Trump in the United States, everybody's looking to Italy as another one of these referendums that's sort of about one thing, but really is about something bigger and something else, the future of Europe. Is that how you're looking at the ballot on Sunday? And is that the way anybody else should be looking at it?
Thanks, Charles. I think it's true to an extent that most referendums that we see these days are never really about what's on the actual ballot paper. Just as the Brexit referendum was mostly about immigration rather than the bold membership of the European Union, this referendum in Italy is about so much more than just a dry question about changing the electoral system and the power of the Senate. But I do think it's more about the national picture than it is about the European level and the EU as a whole. I think it's tempting to portray it that way from the outside looking into Italy. But I definitely think that the idea is more that Renzi's proposals will make the government too powerful and will reinforce the power of the establishment in Italy. And I think that's the narrative that's really playing out here.
Dave, we have to do this with you periodically. It's time for forecasts, and I need to put you on the spot.
Oh, yes.
The ballot's on Sunday. The results will be in on Monday. This podcast lasts for 2 weeks. Who's going to win?
Well, the No campaign rejecting the referendum is currently in a narrow poll lead. Narrow, but it's been quite consistent for several months now. And so it would be something of a surprise if that is turned over on polling day. Although there is some suggestion that there are a number of shy yes voters. So I don't want to sit on the fence. I do think No is going to win at this stage, but it wouldn't be the greatest shock in history if differential turnout, maybe the people who want to vote yes and make Italy a much more easily governable country, because all its multiple governments tend to fall because they can't get a majority in the Senate. I wouldn't be surprised if they're more motivated to vote than the vague anti-establishment, anti-Renzi, anti-government collection of people who are on the No side.
Dave, let's go with assuming that your forecast is accurate. We get a caretaker government because we anticipate that Renzi will step aside. Is that correct, by the way, Dave? Do you think that's what's going to happen?
Renzi said he'll resign. It's possible that he might be reappointed or he might get another go, but I don't see it myself. I think he'll have to go just because his own party will probably lose a bit of confidence in him.
Okay, so we get a caretaker government. We get fresh elections, and we get sort of more of the same in Italy. Tell us what business is supposed to make of this referendum and what business should be thinking about and looking for in the sort of near to middle term for Italy.
I think the international markets and the international community more widely have invested quite a lot of hope in Renzi as the person who can lead Italy back towards a more normal style of governance and business environment. And while to an extent that's true, I think his use of the back me or sack me tactic, first in Parliament and now in this referendum, is inevitably going to lead to instability sooner or later. That said, if he does resign and we go to early elections, we may not go to early elections, there may be a technocratic interim government, but we are probably going to see an increase in Italian bond spreads and probably not full-on return to the debt crisis of 2011-12-13, but a slight return of it maybe, and so that will put pressure on Italian banks, on Italian businesses within their own environment, and on the businesses coming in, looking at the stability of the country. Will the five-star movement, very inexperienced in government, profit whenever the elections finally take place? And if we do get new elections under the existing electoral law, which Renzi's trying to change, can there be any stability to come out of that? So it's not a good situation for Italy, but at the end of the day, it's the situation that Italy's been in for years.
David Lee, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chuck, thanks. Before we close out today's podcast, let's talk about a few other issues worth thinking about during the next couple of weeks.
On Sunday, the 4th of December, Austria will hold a rerun of its presidential election. Small-scale, peaceful social unrest is likely to occur in central areas of the capital, Vienna, if the far-right Freedom Party's candidate, Norbert Hofer, loses the election again by a narrow margin and raises allegations of fraud. The race is likely to be tight.
Also, on Sunday, 4 December, presidential elections are being held in Uzbekistan following the death of President Islam Karimov in September, who was in power for 26 years. The transition process so far has been calm and orderly, and the pervasive security services will ensure that election day and the days and weeks following pass off without incident. Four candidates are standing, but the process is not truly competitive. All state resources are being mobilized to ensure that Prime Minister and Interim President Shavkat Mirziyoyev will win.
Finally, Claudine, on Monday, the 5th of December, the International Atomic Energy Agency will gather in Vienna, Austria, for the International Conference on Nuclear Security.
That's it for this early December edition of the Risk Map podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another podcast and another look at geopolitics and business around the world. Until then, thanks very much for listening, and bye for now from London.
Claudine, thanks very much for hosting and for the chat. For our listeners, thanks for clicking and listening. Until next time, goodbye from London.